Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcott.
Happy CJ Cup week.
Byron Nelson, dude. Get it right. It's Byron Nelson. Byron Nelson, which used to actually be a pretty marquee event. It's kind of lost its luster over the years since Byron's been gone. But we're back at it. It's been several weeks of really marquee fields and big events, so it's kind of time to take a breath, but there's still plenty of action to be had out there, so be sure to check us out, fantasygolfinsider.com, to conduct all of your research each and every week of the PGA Tour season, which is just about every week of the year. Be sure to check us out. You can build all of your lineups on our lineup generator. Check out our course comp tool, our putting splits tool, rolling stats, you name it. We have it at fantasygolfinsider.com. Before we jump into Byron Nelson this week, Zachary, because I'm not sure. I'll just wait on that. Let's talk a little bit about the PGA Championship. Aaron Rye just pulled away in the end. There wasn't even drama. He's in. He knows he's won, and there's guys still with several holes to play on the course. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a crazy finish because when he finally pulled ahead yesterday, I thought, well, we see guys all the time in this position that aren't really expected to be here, and usually coming down the stretch, they start to falter. You know, all of a sudden they start to tighten up. They hit a couple of wayward shots and soon enough, they end up falling back. I mean, classic case would be like a guy like Mito Pereira a few years back when he was leading the tournament just about the whole time and then collapsed down the stretch and lost. And so I was kind of waiting for that moment. But Rye went the other direction. He just kept playing better and better, put more and more distance between himself and the rest of the field. Like, thought maybe John Rahm could possibly make a charge. But, I mean, getting to 9-under, especially on the course – played extremely tough the first couple days. Seemed like there was a lot more scoring for certain players over the weekend. I'm not sure what they did exactly on Saturday, if they loosened things up a little bit more, because there were definitely some lower numbers that were out there to be had. But yeah, he put on a clinic. Kept thinking that there's going to be a few of these bigger names that will make a little bit of a run, but they never really did, and so it was a nice win for him. But yeah, I mean, just from the way that the tournament finished, you look at the way the course played in like 2018 versus, for the PGA Championship. I mean, you might as well have just completely ignored course history, which I think for the most part we did.
Yeah.
We really didn't anticipate that things would play anywhere close to what it had previously, but it was almost like a whole new golf course out there.
I was frustrated because Aaron Rye is a guy who I've owned a lot. Yeah. I usually generally target him on tighter courses, small courses, because he's so good off the tee accuracy wise.
Yeah.
It's just all about, is it your time or isn't it? It just seems to happen. We've seen it happen so many times. We saw it with JJ Spahn last year.
Classic.
Just come out of nowhere and it's just their week and they're making 60-foot putts and it's just their time, and it's tough to kind of narrow down. It doesn't really seem to even matter the type of course in those situations.
Yeah, he gained 7 strokes putting, which ended up being 5th best in the field last week, which for him, that's not normally, everybody elevates themselves putting-wise typically when they have a win like that. But yeah, that's what really propelled him there at the end. So it was a surprise finish. I felt pretty good overall about, my player pool. Scotty was a little bit of a disappointment again, obviously. And again, the case being if you ended up using him on your roster, it wasn't likely that helped to win you anything. I ended up going with 3 of the kind of star players at the top just to get a few extra shots. So I had my lineup was Cam Young, I had Xander, and I had Åberg there. So those were the 3 that I ended up going with, just because it was so easy to build a team with 3 studs like that and then work your way down from the bottom into that value range. And so that ended up actually paying off nicely, since a couple of those guys ended up finishing ahead of Scotty for the week. I did run into Adam Scott, who was very unfortunate in terms of his play. We were kind of getting used to him playing poorly on Thursday, but this week he also played poorly on Friday and went home. So that was a little bit disappointing, as I had a lot of other guys around him who ended up playing really well for the week. That was the one guy that I missed. So my team did make it again, was able to win in cash games. So pretty happy with that. But yeah, no Rye shares for me. Yeah, I mean, there were the problem, I guess, for me was there were so many other guys that were down on that low end that I actually really did like, that it loosened up the salary cap for me enough when I built my player pool. So I didn't really need to have a lot more of those golfers down there. I had saved so much money in terms of, and not like Alex Fitzpatrick played well, but he made the cut. You know, he was down there. I had a lot of Alex Smalley, you know, so he did really well down there in that range. Nikolai Højgaard was another one that I played. So I had already picked a bunch of those guys that were down there. So it was tough. It right really didn't stand out against any of those names. So yeah, I never even would have, he was still a ways away outside of my player pool. And probably most people for the week too. I can't imagine he was more than 1 or 2% owned for some of the winning GPP lineups.
What do you think about Bryson?
Yeah, I avoided him. Which I felt happy about, because I was having a very hard time narrowing it down. I did play Rahm, so I felt great about that, because he wasn't especially spectacular at Augusta. But yeah, I kind of went back and forth between those two. I'm like, well, I'm going to play one. I guess I'm just going to go with Rahm, who's tended to be just the more consistent player over time on the LIV Tour, even though Bryson does have some wins. I didn't really get to see too much of Bryson's play. I was mostly just kind of following him on Shot Tracker, but it was laughably bad early on Thursday, and it didn't get any better at all on Friday. And just thought, you know, I don't know if he's still dealing with some lingering injury issues or what it is. It's hard to tell, but it was awful. He was just terrible again. You know, so now he's missed the cut at Augusta and badly missed the cut at the PGA Championship. So I really don't know what to make of his play. Did you watch any of him?
I there wasn't much, unless you tuned in to early on Thursday and Friday. I didn't, because he just wasn't pictured very much. I was following along on Shot Tracker as well. But it'll be interesting to see. What do you think of him at the U.S. Open?
Well, now I'm definitely out. I can't imagine anybody will be in on him there. His price should plummet. And even if he plays pretty well in any upcoming LIV events, like after these first two disasters of the year, nobody's going to want to roster him, especially if he's still anywhere near 10K, which I would guess after these last couple performances, he's got to drop down to maybe 9,8500, somewhere in that range before people would even really think about using him for the next event.
Want to jump into Byron?
Oh, let's go.
All right, let's talk a little bit about it. The course is TPC Craig Ranch. This will be the sixth year, I believe. 5 years we have results for. And this year's a little bit different, though, because they did a renovation after last year. That tends to happen when someone scores minus 31 on your course. You need to change it a little bit. So they did some renovations. It is a par 71, almost 7,400 yards. Grass is 100% bent grass this week. Average green size is 6,778 square feet. A couple of the changes that they've made is they've added bunkers. They've put them in different, more difficult positions. They've changed the greens, so I expect them to be faster than they have been in the past. And they've changed the structure of them so that they'll have more difficult pin placements. This is all stuff that I've been reading that they'll do. Now, do I think it's going to play difficult? No. They're probably still going to score in the minus 20 range, I'm guessing. But I just don't think it's going to be a complete mockery like it turned into last year. And we have a full field this week and regular cut top 65 in ties. So keep that in mind. What are you using for comp courses for Craig Ranch, Zachary?
Oh, let's see. Let me pull those up. I've got those here.
I'll just say the one that I really like and I've always used is TPC Scottsdale. There's been quite a bit of crossover on those two courses over the last 5 years.
I used Keen Trace, Muirfield Village, Deer Run, Scottsdale, Summerlin, and TPC Twin Cities. Those are the ones that we went with for the week. So try to go with some of the easier courses, bent grass, moderate to par 71 length, kind of fits within that wheelhouse for most of these.
I talked about in my article this week about the Scotty conundrum this week.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier.
$14,800. I had it in my mind before the pricing came out. I'm like, he's going to be up in price. I didn't think it was going to be this high. And the difference between him and the other top tier guys is such a tremendous amount. But when you try and build rosters with him, you're left with $7,000.
Yeah,
and it's terrible. DraftKings pricing, they closed off at $6,000 this week, so it's back to that.
Yep.
And the problem is with a field like this is that 6K range are guys that aren't even usually on the PGA Tour. So you end up with five other guys that are just – I can build a few lineups. Like – you gravitate toward a few 6K guys that are tolerable and a 7K or a 71, 72, something like that. But there is no way you can construct 150 lineups with Scotty in it this week.
And he's got to win too. So he's, if he doesn't win, it's just not likely that.
There's zero chance if he doesn't win.
Yeah. So if he gives you another second place finish, like he has so often, God forbid, he's not even in the top 10 like last week, then you're completely toast there for your Scotty teams. Now, that said, since the quality of the 9K range is so poor,
you
could still probably get him into your player pool, 30-40% to have some, and then hope that you by some miracle are able to piece together one or two lineups that actually have five guys that make it through. It's challenging. I would say he's unplayable for cash games. He will not be in my cash game column. If you want to use him on the GPP side, just because he's such a significantly better talent than the rest of this field here. And then, take a lot of shots on hopefully finding some things that can kind of come together. But what you're going to need to win a GPP for him is for him to blow away the field. So he's going to have one of those weeks where he's, 15, 20 points ahead of the second place guy. And then hopefully the second, third, or fourth place guy is somebody that you actually hit on in that upper, the mid to upper 6K, low 7K range to put things
good
together.
Good luck trying to get five guys through the cut down in that 7K, 6K.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, had the field just been a little bit stronger, it would make it very easy to completely ignore him. But outside of Scotty, Siwoo and Jordan, I like both of them. Both of those guys will definitely be in my player pool this week, just because after that, then it really falls off. You've got Brooks there who has had some pretty good moments, but now he's 9,600, which I don't love. Maybe he will be a $9,600 player again at some point. I don't think he's quite there yet, but the name's still big. And then after Brooks, it's right over a waterfall for the most part. Guy like Keith Mitchell has just been, I guess I would just describe him as being okay this season, not even great. Now he's 9,400 and he hasn't even been elite at this tournament. You got Rio there at 93, who's had a pretty good season, pretty good cut maker, but 9,300 in value there, tough to come by, if it's like the last four events for him where he hasn't finished inside of the top 35. Davis Thompson has been pretty good over his last three starts, but he's had kind of a up and down year. We got Pearson Cootie, who does have some Texas roots, Has played here a few times. He finished 25th here a year ago. The Florida stretch was really bad. He's been a little bit better since then. I think he's probably somebody that's in play. And then Michael Thor Bjornsson at 9 there. I thought maybe last week he would be an okay play for the PGA Championship, and he got absolutely butchered. So just not a lot. So I guess that's kind of my strategy. I'll definitely have Siwoo and Jordan in there. And then it's just going to have me kind of playing around with the player pool just to see what it looks like. Because there's I don't like the 8K range very much either. So there is a good chance that Scotty just may end up finding his way into my player pool almost on default, just because the rest of the field is so poor that I may just end up with a player pool full of those top three and then a smattering of eights and then a lot of the seven lower sevens and upper 6K range.
Yeah, the 8K range is bleak. That's for sure. You get the wrong Højgaard at 8,900.
Yeah. It's Wyndham a big price Park. Boost, which is weird.
Jeez. Sungjae has been awful for the most part. I could hear an argument for Penrith. Mac Meisner has been pretty good lately. I do like Grazerman quite a bit. We've seen him trending upward after a miserable start to the year. He's long off the tee. I kind of like him there. I also have an outright on him this week. Actually, were some reasonably decent odds this week with Scotty being in the field and it being so weak. Some of the better odds available compared to what we normally see. Now, some were not good, but I got Grazerman at, I think it's 66-1 or something, which isn't terrible.
Give me both Seabez and Eric Cole there at 8,300 and 8,100.
Okay. All right.
Both those guys have got solid course history. You know, Seabez is somebody, generally speaking, who you can count on to make a cut. Doesn't always have a huge amount of upside, but he's been all right. He's only missed one cut over the last 3 months. He's
been pretty good lately.
Yeah, a couple of top 20s in his last three starts. There made the cut this past week, so that's solid. Eric Cole, two top 25s here. He's got three straight top 15 finishes. If you look in the rolling stats, Seabez ranks third in strokes gained total here over the last 16 rounds. Eric Cole is actually second. Both of them surprisingly good with their iron play. So Seabez isn't always a guy. Usually he's definitely a short game guy, accurate off the tee, kind of a mess everywhere else. But his iron is actually pretty good. 20th among this field in strokes gained approach over the last 16 rounds. Eric Cole, 13th in strokes gained approach, both playing well with their short game, which is kind of where you'd expect for that. So I like both of those guys a lot. Those are probably my two favorites there in the value range.
One guy who caught my eye after his performance last week was Matty Schmid, 7,500. Yeah. Then you look at what he's done here the last 3 years. Just to cut each of the past three. I hate that.
Yeah, the other tricky part is, and it's one of those intangible types of things that I probably dwell on a little bit more than you do, but like, how is he going to be feeling having been grinding things out at Aronimek last week, fourth place finish? I mean, he was actually up in the lead at one point. So is there an emotional letdown? He's coming into a course where obviously he's had trouble, and then there's the emotions of not getting it done, which that's likely his shot at a major right there, right? Yeah. I mean, that moment, he's just not a guy who's anywhere near the top of most leaderboards when it comes to major tournaments. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I would be considering with him, just mental exhaustion coming into a week like this on a course that he already doesn't really like. Numbers are all going to look great, but, yeah, I do worry about that a little bit. Other names, I guess Tom Kim has – he's been – definitely not the Tom Kim that we knew a few years back. Had a sixth place finish a couple weeks ago at Myrtle Beach. Generally, he's been a decent cut maker. If he can get the irons going a little bit, then this could be a decent spot for him. He's 3 of 4 in terms of made cuts here. Kevin Roy is one that kind of stood out model-wise for me. He had a 15th place finish here a year ago. He had a third place finish a couple of weeks back. Hasn't missed a cut over the last 3 months. Pretty good ball striker. The guy like Roy, I've written him up in my column a few times. Definitely a guy that I tend to focus more in on this time of season. And this is kind of an interesting thought too, because this is we're starting to get to that point of the season where we get tournaments like this, where we start to have easier fields and much easier courses. And so those guys who tend to dominate during the fall swing every year, you know, the Kevin Roys or the next guy down here, Rico Hui at 7,600, a lot of those guys have, you know, they tend to struggle a little bit during the early parts of the season, even towards like the middle of the year. And then you start to see it, the tour hit this time of year and these types of events between the majors. And that's when a lot of these guys start to pick it up again. And I would anticipate a guy like Roy, a guy like Rico there in that 7,600 range. This would be the type of spot where I could see either of them kind of breaking out to the upside again.
Sign me up for some Austin Eckroat action, 7,500. I think that's a fantastic spot for him. And Bo Hostler at 7,300. I like him here. He's a regular playing here in Texas. And he's had a couple decent performances over the past couple of months as well. Anything else in this low 7K range? Because if you're owning Scotty, this is your range, buddy.
Yeah, you kind of have to. You know, John Perry hasn't been real pretty for much of the season, but he has yet to miss a cut. So
makes cuts, yeah.
And he's not bad. Like, you know, the finishes are not crazy impressive. I mean, he's got a couple of top 15s there over the last few months, so that's encouraging. But you look at the strokes gain numbers, it's pretty impressive. 13th in terms of tee to green over the last 16 rounds, and it's fifth as far as strokes gain approach. So I like that quite a bit. We got Adrian Dumont de Chassart at 7,400. He's played really well. He had I think he finished 30th here a couple of years ago. He's made the cut in every event over the last 12 weeks, including three top 25 finishes, 10th among this field in strokes gained tee to green. And the short game is actually really solid too. Fifth in terms of strokes gained total over that time. So I like him quite a bit. Good guy Mark Hubbard is 4 for 4 making the cut at this event, including a fifth place finish a year ago. He was having a kind of a crappy season all the way up until Myrtle Beach 2 weeks back. He had the second place finish, just missed out on finally breaking through and getting that first tour win, lost out to Sneds there. But at least that's somewhat encouraging. And I know, I think he actually lives in Texas now as well, so he has that going for him. What do you think of a guy like Tony Finau down here at 7,200? I looked at him on my comp course model this week, and he is one of those names that's right up there near the top. Obviously, it hasn't been a great season for him, but do you think he can turn it around on some of these easier tracks?
I've written off Tony unless he's playing in a field like this for this price.
Right, yeah. You're talking yourself back into him, I think.
Sure, because I don't like anything else much more than him down in this range. He plays well on easy courses, right? He's used to playing easy courses. Capable of scoring. He has not found his game or his groove. His off-the-tee game has been a mess. Pretty much everything's been a mess for him. It's funny when you look at the rolling stats, nothing really looks good for him. But what else do you like better down here?
Yeah, there's not a lot. Zachary Boshu at 7,100, I think, is very playable. He's had a handful of top 25s. He's only missed a couple of cuts this season. Coming in with back-to-back top 25 finishes there. Look at the strokes. The rolling stats numbers are pretty solid there. So I think he's won there at 7,100. I'm a sucker for Billy Horschel, even though I probably shouldn't be. Up and down for much of the season, I guess, with him coming to an easier course, Texas course, and I believe on the comp course tools. Yeah, really good numbers. 34 career starts on comp courses, and he has gained just under a stroke per round. And he's definitely not the Billy of old, but no. Again, we're throwing some darts down here and hoping that some things can pay off for us a little bit. So I guess I'll probably end up with a little bit of Billy in the player pool. It gets tricky in the sixes. I'm not really in love with a lot down here.
There's so many guys in the 6K range. Oh my God, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's huge. It's like you look at. Jeez. It's there's what is it range from? So there's what is that total number? Well, 75 guys.
I don't think no one's rosterable under 6,500, are they?
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. Maybe you could stretch for like a Ben Martin. I don't know. I guess I don't really love that.
See, that's the problem. If you had a $6,100 or $6,200 guy, could go more in that mid 7K range if you wanted to own Scotty. But all going to have to be in right that upper 6K range.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen enough from the last couple starts of Nick Dunlop to start to feel a little better? I don't. Maybe. Yeah. There really aren't names here that stand out for me in that upper 6K range. You could take a flyer on Cam Champ and hope that he pays off like he did a year ago, but he's been pretty much terrible since the end of last year. Yeah. Had a lot of tournaments where he had decent finishes, but just nothing consistent since then. So he's definitely one that's fallen off there a little bit.
A lot of these guys just haven't played. They played maybe Myrtle Beach or something like that, but outside of that, they just not a lot of action.
Yeah, and then you just kind of you scroll down here on the rolling numbers. Aiden Springer's look okay. Pontus Nyholm, maybe he's either been up or down, but he's had a few decent starts here and there. He's kind of a young up and coming player, really good tee to green player. So, maybe he could work out for you, but.
Kanaya at 69, I think he's rosterable. I'll own some shares of him.
Yeah. What'd you think about Garrick Hago showing up late and taking a two-stroke penalty last week?
And he parted ways with his caddy today.
Classic. Yeah. That's I guess I would probably feel a little bit like that too. But major championship, maybe just know the time and show up, figure out how to show up,
maybe even a couple minutes early. I don't know.
Yeah. In fact, you are allowed to show up just a few minutes early to the tee time and then just wait until it's your turn. That's legal. Kind of hilarious. Cause he's one of those players who he had moments in the fall where you're like, oh wow, he looks like he's going to be decent again. And now just awful in 2026 again. I have no idea how that kind of stuff happens, but
probably don't want to be missing cuts because of that when you're just fighting for your life on tour.
Yeah, that's wild. But the six is David Skins, his numbers have looked okay of late, but there just really isn't a lot to go with. So if you do build a Scotty team, it's likely going to be like three guys at 7,000 and one at like 71 and one at 7,200 will kind of be the way that your team, I think, ends up shaking out.
I think the elevated events really create, it's just too easy for these guys to get paid just for showing up at the elevated events that they're never going to come to these.
The disparity is too big. And there's so many elevated events.
Yep.
That
yep.
it crowds you out. I mean, like for the last 5 weeks, it's been either major or elevated field. So starting with the Masters every year, I mean, the schedule gets hectic. So it's just natural that this would be.
It's a weird deal though, because these kind of middling guys don't really have a great chance of winning those elevated events that are stacked fields. They have a much better chance of getting exemption playing in these events and having a real chance at winning them. So you're kind of playing that tune, but you're also saying, well, I'm guaranteed money here and I just can't play every single week. So you're kind of trading money for opportunity to get a spot on the tour for a long time.
Yeah. Everything just feels like it's in flux right now with golf, because we don't know what's going to happen with the LIV Tour. We don't really know yet what's going to happen with the schedule for 2027. I mean, the Hawaii portion's gone. I think they're still playing the Amex, but we don't even know what the elevated fields will look like next year. They're still going to just be the way that they are. They're going to be like kind of the way they were proposed, be a little bigger and with a cut. I mean, I don't think anybody even really knows. It's it's all just been kind of a mess here over the last couple of years, just sort of throwing stuff up against the wall and seeing what sticks.
Do you think that's turning people off?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely do think it's because you don't, I mean, it, like the event like the PGA Championship gets hurt because you don't have like the big star who wins it. And you get a guy like Aaron Rye and it's a good story, but it's not, right. it's not a Scotty. It's not Rory and Scotty battling to the finish.
Yeah.
You know, putting on a great show for everybody. So I think that hurts. And then you get weeks like this where your viewing audience is checking out entirely. I mean, yeah, I know that the fantasy hardcores are just as excited for this as other weeks, but that's just not a huge percentage of the audience,
right?
Overall. And yeah, then the bigger events, there's just so many of them during the year. It's like, oh, this is a signature event. Well, how many of those are there? Like 8 of them, something like that, plus the majors, plus the playoffs. Like, it just doesn't really feel like there's that much prestige just because they've called it a signature event, or, you know, an elevated event, or whatever terminology that they want to use for it. So I think the golf audience at this point is just a little confused about the direction of things. They would like to see, you know, the best players in the world all back again. I think they miss, you know, the true golf fans do miss the cut. They do enjoy having that cut. They do enjoy having like the bigger fields.
I think they miss the consistency of the top guys in the world from major to major and even elevated event. You'll have a guy, you know, play well like a Morikawa, and then you think, oh wow, he's elite in the world, and then he's just terrible. Bryson, yeah. Another guy, marquee name. Now in the last two majors, he's completely flopped. Where'd he go?
Yeah.
Lord, yeah, you know, sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. Now even Scotty, who's dominating, is not even a factor so many times in these events now either. So it's the consistency isn't really there among the top players either. So thus, you don't get any rivalries.
Yep. I think there's the guys have made so much money at this point. It's and then with just guys going over to the Live Tour, I think just overall that has kind of devalued winning tournaments. You know, you get those guys who are gone, so the fields are a little bit weaker, and because obviously nobody cares how many live events anybody wins over there, but even winning like events like this, it just doesn't feel particularly prestigious. So even if Scotty does add one, it's like, whatever, you're kind of expecting him to, you know, be up there at the top. But yeah, so I would be interested in kind of seeing if the ratings had peaked a little bit, because it felt like we were in a sweet spot a few years ago where golf was doing extremely well, and now I feel like it's maybe struggled a bit.
Yeah, well, and then you have, you know, like a Jordan Spieth, who is capable of captivating a large audience. He's still as terrible as he's been, as long as it's been since he's won, is still one of the more popular guys out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People remember what he did 11 years ago now.
Right.
It was
right.
One of the most amazing seasons ever that, you know, that anybody's going to have. But yeah, he hasn't been able to get back to the glory days of anywhere near close to that, really, in like the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, it's mostly been kind of a drought. I'm sure there's a win in there, win or two that are in there, but it's mostly kind of gone dry. So yeah. They really need that big personality to kind of come in and get things going for him again. Because Scotty could be that guy, but I don't think he wants to really step up and be that. And you definitely don't have anything like Tiger where anybody's got, you know, that much game and that much charisma and really
can. I think Bryson is probably the closest thing to it that would be capable.
Yeah,
of getting a large audience attracted and riveted to it, but he just hasn't been able to be consistent enough.
Did you see his comments about what happens if the Live Tour folds? He thinks maybe he'll just focus on his YouTube channel.
Oh, good. Jesus. It's like, well, that kind of sums it up right there, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't even need the PGA Tour. It's you can just make your money off of YouTube views.
Yep.
You know, just going out and screwing around on the course and
maybe playing 20 rules. Maybe that's our problem.
I think it is. That just the money isn't going to be the driving force anymore. So
no, no, and certainly not pride.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they're gonna. I think they're doing what they can to try to get the game back on track. I mean, it does seem like they put in a lot of hours and a lot of different ideas coming in. But yeah, this year is still, these last couple of years, it's just been a lot of trial and error, and it just hasn't really worked. None of it is really, the elevated stuff, I don't think, has resonated with the fans at all.
No,
and the players don't care enough to even show up to them every week now. So it definitely hasn't. You know, I just won a big tournament, so I think I'll just skip this event with a $20 million prize pool. All right.
Yeah, wasn't the first year they were obligated to go to everyone, and then it was you could miss one. And now I don't even know if there's any requirements for them.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, Rory's already missed a couple. So,
right. And what are you going to penalize him? Penalize him enough money for him to care.
Right.
So you've kind of created an animal that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
All right. Let's get out of here, Zachary. Byron Nelson this week, everybody. Next week is, I think we stick in Texas.
Colonial.
Yeah,
we'll be at Colonial.
That's so kind of, I like Colonial. That's a cool course. Old school course. And we should have a little bit better field, I think, next week. And then what's the week after that?
Memorial. So that'll be a fun one.
So that'll be a loaded field. So stick with it, and things will pick up then, and then not too far off from the U.S. Open either. So we're getting there. Best of luck this week, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.